Welcome to the TeacherCast Educational Network, coming to you from the TeacherCast studios since 2011. Join us each week as we bring you the latest educational news, EdTech updates, and hottest interviews with today's most influential leaders in education. And now, for your host, Jeff Bradbury.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the TeacherCast Educational Network. My name is Jeff Bradbury. Thank you so much for joining us and making TeacherCast your home for professional development. This is the Jeff Bradbury Show, and we are talking today all about education and literacy. I have a fantastic guest on today to talk all about his life in the NBA, and how he went from a student, a teenager, and an adult who spent his entire life illiterate to suddenly having 3 degrees, graduating summa cum laude, and now he's on a mission to change the world and help students all around the world not only become literate, but become excellent readers. I want to introduce on my show today, Mr. Dean Tolson. Dean, how are you today? Welcome to TeacherCast.
Thank you, Jeff, for having me on the show and this opportunity to speak to your audience and your listeners out there about overcoming adversity and graduating from high school and college and seeking higher education in their lives.
Well, thank you so much for your time. You know, you have an amazing story to tell. I was having an opportunity earlier this week to check out the book, Power Forward. We're going to make sure that all the links are below in the description and over on our blog post at TeacherCast. Talk to us a little bit about the book. What made you write it? And what kind of response are you getting from those who are having the opportunity to check it out?
Well, you know, I felt that I was a superstar athlete and I was politically robbed of an opportunity to shine in the NBA at the highest level because of politics and illiteracy. Well, and these kids that have this dream to get to the NBA and make all this money and do all these wonderful things and become the Michael Jordans and the LeBron James of life and thinking that pie in the sky is reachable and all the money and the glitter and the glory and the glamour and the allure that's attached to it, and the fame and fortune, less than 0.1% get it done.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. You have had an amazing career. You've had an amazing life. If we can, let's kind of start back at the beginning. From what I understand, you grew up with some hard times in your life. Talk to us a little bit about what it was like growing up.
Yeah, well, as a child, my entire family and siblings were you know, dirt poor. We were put in an orphan home for 5 years.
And what was that like?
At the age of 9. And I stayed in there till I was 14. Mm. So it was like a little mini correctional center. You had to fight every day. They stealing or skipping school or lying and never do their homework or stealing candy bars from the candy store on the corner or run away and got the police looking for you because you're so distraught, you just walk off.
Talk to me a little bit about that. Were you did you have a sit down and you were told that this is what's going to happen, or did you just wake up one day and hey, we're going? Like, what was that experience like for you?
My mom, it was her decision because she couldn't financially keep us all at home, and so she said, "You three oldest boys got to go in the orphan home. That's where you're gonna go. You gotta, you know, I can't afford to take care of all 5 kids by myself anymore." So when she put us in there, we didn't know if she was gonna come back and get us or not.
What was it like getting out, or how did you know that you were gonna be removed from that environment?
Well, you didn't know anything. At 9 years old, it's just like your kids right now. You wake them up, you take them to a place, you drop them off, you leave them for 5 years, you don't see them again. What do you expect them to think at 9 and 10 years old? Not a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
They expect whatever it is they see. And that's what they deal with for the next 5 years. That's what I did.
Was that around the time where you first discovered basketball?
No, I discovered basketball at 8 years old. When Wilt Chamberlain came to my house and I saw him, I had a love for the game right after meeting him. And that was my dream, was to become an NBA basketball player. And then I grew up playing for Bill Russell with the Seattle Supersonics.
Take us through all that. You were drafted in the fifth round, 80th overall in 1974, spent 80 games in the NBA for the Seattle Supersonics, played for Bill Russell, as you mentioned, and then you spent 11 years playing internationally. Take us through that opportunity here. How did you get into the NBA? What was it like? Playing professional ball?
Well, it was a miraculous journey. I never should have ever got to play in the NBA. That's another reason I'm doing this story for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I never should have got in. First of all, I was illiterate. Second of all, I should have never gotten in the university because someone cheated for me to get in. Took my ACT, SAT entrance exam. That's what got me in. Then I go to 4 years of college from 18 to 21. And all I do is skip class, drink beer, and ride around the campus and chase the girls, okay, in my car. And go to practice, play the games, and break all the records that I still hold to this day. And then get drafted at 21 to go to Seattle in the NBA. I never should have been able to get through all of those phases and stair steps of education and pro ball. So I'm so disenchanted after 3 or 4 years of playing with the Sonics, I decided, heck, they're not going to never let me play. Let me get on an airplane and go on over to these foreign countries and play until my heart is content. And so I did that for the next 11, 12 years.
So you went through all of your grammar school, all throughout high school, into college, into the pros, and all throughout this time couldn't read or write. Right. Was that a secret? Did people know that? Did they just accept that? How did somebody take your SATs for you?
Nobody knew I was illiterate. I could talk. I could mimic things. I could copycat. I knew how to do those sort of things. But me actually, the one learning the book and the lesson and actually articulate and write and follow instructions and do math and all of this? No, that was not me, and I was not going to do it. You couldn't even talk me into doing it. Because my dad had a third grade education, my mom had an eighth grade education. So I went to school, all through elementary school, all through high school, and I goofed off. And I became the top player in the state of Missouri in 1970. I averaged 30 points a game and 20 rebounds a game at Central High School in Kansas City, and was the number one player across the state of Missouri. And I had the Kansas Jayhawks, and everybody wanted to talk to me. And I didn't have the grades to get in any of those schools, but one school did it for me, and that was Arkansas.
And so you played college for the Arkansas Razorbacks, where you said you spent a lot of time not necessarily in the classroom. You were driving around. I'm curious, did you have a driver's license at the time?
Yeah, I had a driver's license.
Okay.
I had a driver's license at 16 years old.
And so what was life like growing up when you couldn't read? Was it you were completely illiterate? You could read a little bit. I mean, I guess what my
question is, 65 years ago, when you took the driver's test, all you had to do is kind of be able to drive the car and they give you a license.
I guess one of my questions is especially playing pro ball, how did you manage, finances and all of that stuff when
You're you literate. Have a secret.
Yeah.
One thing I knew how to do was go get somebody to help me with everything that I didn't know how to do. And when you are a pro ball player, everybody wants to help you because they want to be affiliated and associated with an NBA basketball player. But nobody's going to hold your hand all the way through life like that for 80 years.
Yeah.
So when I was done playing pro basketball, then nobody want to do that for me no more. So when overseas, they did it for 12 years.
In 1974-75, what was the going salary for an NBA player back then?
$30,000 minimum wage. I got less than that. I am the lowest paid NBA player in the history of the NBA.
Wow. So what was it like going from living where you were living up to Seattle? What was that? What was that, you know, getting off that plane and looking around? What was Seattle like back then?
Well, it was quite different than Kansas City where I grew up. I mean, you know, Arkansas was off in the country for 4 years, Fayetteville, Arkansas. And the transition from there to Seattle was like night and day. It was a very clean city. It was considered the Emerald City, and you know, the Mount Rainier and the ocean and the snow-capped mountains and the pine trees. I mean, it was like paradise as far as I was concerned. And when I went and turned pro ball there and made the team, I said, I'll never leave Seattle. And I stayed there for 50 years and I finally left.
And am I correct? I was reading through the book. You did spend some time in the military, correct?
5 years.
What was that like?
I was drafted. And I was too tall to be in there. And the war was going on, Vietnam War. It was hot and heavy. And they forced me to serve anyway. And as I went through my basic training and my advanced infantry training, I became eligible and combat ready to send over to Vietnam. And lo and behold, the good Lord stopped the war and we bring them home. And I didn't get deployed.
Did you think you were going to?
If the war would have kept going on, I was guaranteed to go. My MO papers was Fort Polk, Fort Sill, Oklahoma, which is heavy 5th Artillery. Then Düsseldorf, Germany is a holdover. Then Vietnam. Those are my MO papers. Mission of operation. You're going. If the war keeps going, you're going.
That is an amazing story. I mean,
in 73, it stopped.
So if you're going through life, and if you're going through college, finding people to help you do everything or do as much as you can, mm-hmm. what was life in the military like, not being able to read or write?
Military was like prison at that time. A lot of racism in there. I'm in Louisiana. A lot of fighting. I got in a lot of fights. A lot of survival type physical training, and they're teaching you to fight. Mm-hmm. They're teaching you to kill. That's what they're teaching you. And there's nothing nice about that. I didn't like that. But that's why you're there. So you can get ready to go to Nam and fight with the rest of the soldiers. And so I didn't run up to Canada like the rest of them chickens. I said, I'm a man. And even though I know that they drafted me at 6'9", and I should not be running through the weeds in Vietnam at 6'9", 6'10", I know that's wrong. I went in anyway and served the country.
So you made it through the military, you made it through the NBA, you made it through international ball. And at some point in time, you probably said to yourself, I need to learn how to read and write. What was that moment and what happened next?
That was with my mom. I was playing in Athens, Greece, and I was playing for the same team over there that Kurt Rambis played for over there. It's called Ike. And Ike been around forever. That ball club and organization over there been over there forever. They won the first basketball club to establish, be established over there. It's A period, E period, K period, Ike. And Ike brought me over there, gave me a 2-year deal. And I played the first year. I went home to visit my mother. And when I got there after the first year, I hadn't seen her in 2 or 3 years because I've been all over South America and the Manila, Philippines and everywhere. And she says, boy, you keep going over to little places and I don't know where you're at. And if anything would have happened to you, I wouldn't even know where to start looking for you. So she took my plane ticket and my passport and contract and hid it in the attic of the house from me. So I'm, you know, time wound it down. You know, I'm only going to be there for 2 weeks to visit her. And I said, Mother, have you seen my paperwork on my dresser? No, I ain't seen it. I said, Mother, it's just you and me in the house. It didn't just walk off the dresser. I laid it right on top of the dresser drawer in there. She walks around with her mouth poked out for 2 or 3 days. And she goes, yes, I seen it. And you ain't getting it back. I said, huh? Excuse me? What are you talking about, Mother? Give me my stuff. So after he and hawing about it, she finally went on up there and got it and brought it back down and laid it on the dining room table. And she said, before I give it to you, I want you to sit down here and I'm going to talk to you. And I'm going to ask you to do something that I ain't never would ask or dream of asking you to do because I know you can't read and write. She said, would you consider going back to college and getting your education and degree because I know you're not going to be able to play basketball for the rest of your life. So my mother retired me from playing pro basketball at 32 years old. And I went back to the University of Arkansas campus to overcome 80 hours of F on a 124-hour transcript to graduate. I left 80 hours of F there from 18 years old to 21 years old. They made me retake every single class that I failed. And I ended up with 200 hours to get an undergraduate degree, a BSc in history and social studies, and bachelor's of science and education with a coaching endorsement.
And is that when you first started to become literate, or what was that transformation? Yeah,
that was all in that same process of graduating and overcoming illiteracy at the same time, simultaneously.
So you have your degree. What happened then?
I decided I'd start my own carpet cleaning business because as I was getting my undergraduate degree at 32 years old, I was working part-time for like $6.50 an hour in Kansas City when I go home and visit my mom on the weekend and make $150, $200 on the weekend cleaning carpet and putting myself through school so I have some pocket change cleaning carpet. And then when I graduated, I started my own company.
Where do you think you would be if your mother hadn't sat you down?
Back in Kansas City with the guys that I grew up with, mm-hmm. that aren't doing anything in their life right now. They're still hanging out, doing things that men shouldn't do. And they don't have a bright future ahead of them. And at 72 years old, I got more future than I want.
What did your mother say when she first saw that diploma?
She cried. My mother went to all three of my graduations. She saw my high school graduation. She saw my undergraduate college graduation. And then she saw my master's degree graduation. And then after that, she died. She saw all three graduations.
You know, you have an amazing story. And again, I was flipping through the book, and I think it's the last page of the book. You talk about paying it forward. And that's something that you certainly are doing through, you know, conversations like this, through writing that book and
reaching kids.
Why? Why is that important to pay it forward? Why was that the last thing on the last page? I think it was. Okay. What is it about paying it forward?
If you see, when you read the book, will you agree that it's a page turner and you don't want to put it down?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, while you're reading, what you're reading is you're seeing a person and an individual overcoming adversity day in and day out, month in and month out, week in and week out, year in week and year out. You see that over and over again, don't you? Mm-hmm. A person that never quits trying. Is that what you read?
It's an amazing read.
I never gave up on it, did I?
Never did.
That's what the message is to the kids today.
And how are kids receiving it? I mean, I've seen the videos, I've seen the news, I've listened to other shows that you've been on. When you stand there and you talk to today's students, today's players, how are they receiving this message?
How are they? You see, you got to see that education in America right now is a pandemic. We're in trouble, man. These kids cannot read. The masses of them cannot read at grade level, man. Whatever grade they're in, they're not reading at that level. We used to be number two in the world in education. Now we're number 28. What does that say to you?
It says a lot. As a teacher, it says a lot.
Oh, okay. I'm addressing that with this.
So what do you see as the answer to this, whether it be at a local level or at a national level?
What I see is America has to make up their mind to start somewhere with this and not keep waiting like it's going to fix itself. It's not. Somebody has to start to fix it. And me, with this story, I'm taking on the toughest job in America to try and fix it.
Well, you're certainly doing a good job at motivating everybody. I mean, the book, again, is called Power Forward. We're going to make sure that we have all the links and stuff out there. What do you hope to leave students with? Is it the message? Is it the idea of staying in school? Is it the idea of, and as you mentioned earlier, 1% of all students trying to become a basketball player actually do? Like, what is your message that you're trying to bring out to students when you get a chance to reach them either on or off the court?
Well, we probably need to agree on a few things to answer that question. And the first thing would be, I've been all over the world, man. And America is the greatest country on earth, period, bar none. What are we doing? Why you take a kid like me and do this with his life? Why? Let's don't do our kids that way. They deserve better. They look up to you. They look up to me. We the baby boomers, we are the last generation to tell them what's up. And then they will not be able to compete globally without this. They will fall further and further behind.
How do you feel that the current NBA project or product is supporting education, literacy, reading? I say this because, I mean, you know, I've seen a lot of stories of Shaquille O'Neal. You know, he went back, he got his doctorate. Now he's Dr. O'Neal. I mean, they do a very good job at promoting that. How do you feel that today's game is promoting education?
There's some magic involved in what I do. And I don't know what they do, but I know what's magical about my story to the kids. You want me to share that magic with you?
Please do.
How do you get a kid to change their mind to do the work and graduate?
Tell me.
From where they are right now.
Tell me.
How do you do that?
Motivation? Give them something to reach for?
That's not how I do it. And I wish somebody would have done it to me. And then I would have had no problem. You have to put fear in these kids, man, or they're not going to listen. And so when I go do a speaking engagement with 2,000 or 3,000 kids in an auditorium, I put fear in their hearts. And I even start crying and everything. And then they understand the pain that they are, that I've been doing. They don't know. I know. And that's the magic that I speak of. Had somebody did me that way, I wouldn't be like this. And it reached me. It couldn't reach me. And I reached them like you can't believe. It's unreal. Nobody knows. I'm the first person in American history to pull this off. No man, athlete, professor, nobody. To go from a straight F student to a straight A student with magna cum laude master. No one. And they won't listen to me. I've been trying to tell them this story for 40 years. Since I was 32 years old when I started doing it. I'm 72. That's 40 years. And it still falls on deaf ears in America. It's ridiculous. They want to politic it. They want to hide it. They want to shove it under the carpet and under the table and act like it don't exist. And all. Get it with these kids, man, or we think they have a lost society.
Dean, it's an amazing story. If a school or an organization wants to have you come out and visit with them, talk to them, and inspire them, how would one do that?
You go to DeanTolson.com website, and there's a book Dean Tolson page on that site, and every institution in this country should have this book in their institution and be sharing it and showing it and teaching it to the kids, man. The discipline, the perseverance, the staying power, the willpower, the never giving up, the working hard, work hard until it hurts and all this. They don't know what. They don't know. I endured all of that, and I did all of these learning skills and things like that. I had to teach myself those skills to pass. Little tricks that kids, you know, that they do to learn. Instead of, let me Google it on my cell phone. You know, the answer ain't in there, man. The answer is in your head when you work and get it to come out. That's what I had to do. I worked so hard. You have no idea. 18 hours a day for 4 years. 15, 16, 17 hours every day. No less than 15 every day.
I'm curious, after you got your first degree, what was the conversation like when you went back to your mom and said, I want to go get my second. I want to go get my third. She must have been really proud of you.
Nobody believed I could do it, Jeff. Nobody believed it. I didn't even know if I could do it myself. I just knew that I overcame one of the most difficult things in life that any human being could overcome. 80 hours of F on a 124-hour transcript, and then graduate with a 2.0001. I realized that I could get a master's now if I want one. I realized that I don't care if you believe me or not. And the same belief that I'm talking about is the belief that I'm trying to instill in kids out here. If I was illiterate and did it, what's the excuse? The only excuse is they're lazy and they don't want to work hard. And nobody's pushing them as they should and put fear in their heart. So when they get 30 and 40 and 50 years old and they can't buy a loaf of bread and a bottle of milk, that they're in trouble. Then the other options are cemetery, prison, institutions, military, wherever they try to go to survive because they're not educated like me. I have basketball as my crutch. That's my crutch that I used until it went away. And then when that crutch went away, it was back to the University of Arkansas because I didn't want to be worth $3.50 an hour. That's what they were paying when I came out in 82. $3.50 an hour, $4 an hour. What are you going to do with that? You're going to make a living off of that. And so I realized that I'm in trouble too. And I realized that the kids in this country, they're in trouble with this, man. And somebody, their house is on fire and nobody's told them. That's my job, is to tell them their house is on fire right now. And it ain't that hard. That's another thing I want to say to the kids. It ain't that hard to do. If you just go to class and turn in your lesson, you'll get a C. That's enough to graduate and get a C or D on the test. You'll get a C out the class. I didn't even do that. I just wanted to be an F student, and I didn't care. You couldn't get my attention.
So with the success of the book, with your 3 degrees, and with all the opportunity in the world to motivate our students, Where do you see your future? Where do you want to be doing in the next couple of years? And what do you hope that
my legacy will leave?
Yeah.
That they can say that Dean Tulsa's life triggered graduations for kids in America. I was the trigger man. I pulled the trigger on it because I'll be dead and gone by the time I get to really see them doing it. I'll be 80 in 8 years. But at least I pulled the trigger on it and recognized it and gave them an example of what they could see and use and benefit from was the Dean Tulsa story.
It is
a motion picture out of this so they can see it. Instead of making all this other stuff that don't matter to nobody.
It is an amazing story. It is an amazing book. And it's certainly going to be one that I'm going to be finishing this week. Cause I like I said, I got about halfway through here, and it is an amazing, amazing book here to look at. We're going to make sure we have all the links.
Tears in your eyes when you're done.
What was that?
You'll have tears in your eyes when you're done.
You know, the pictures, though, right? Like, I'm stopping to look at the pictures, right? You got pictures, of course, growing up. You got pictures from your basketball days. You got pictures,
Bill Russell in there and all that.
Right. There's one of you and Bill Russell sitting. You know, he's coaching you. You're sitting on the sidelines at a Supersonics game. Yeah. And those are just amazing pictures, right? So it's pretty cool. I mean, Dean, first of all, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, because you know, this is a topic, Jeff, that is infinity. We can talk forever. I got on and on and on topics for these kids, man.
Well, let's do it again. Would love to have you back on. Would love to have a second part of this.
I can't put it all in. No, you can't. It's too much, isn't it?
There is a lot. And you know, I'm it's interesting. You're reading it as the host of this show to get ready for this conversation. You're also reading it as a teacher, but you're also reading it as the dad of 10-year-olds. My 10-year-olds who, you know, if there's one thing I tell them to stop more often than not, I tell them to put the book down, right?
Right.
And so it makes you second guess some of those conversations that you have with your own kids.
Right. But you're raising them and teaching them, though.
Absolutely. The best that we can.
This is, you want to avoid what Dean Tolson did. You want to avoid that in your life.
For more information, you can find Dean over at Dean Tolson. That's DeanTolson.com. We're going to make sure that we've got links to the book, to his booking page, and all the stuff about his life and career. And I got links to other podcasts he's been on and other news things. Lots of great stuff over here. Please check that out. Dean, before I go, can I ask you a couple of questions about today's game?
About my what game?
Can I ask you a couple of questions about modern NBA times?
Yeah.
I got to ask you the question that I hear everybody else get asked.
Okay. The way they play the game now is different than we played the game. There's only one correlation that I see that they play right now than what we did. And that is they do play the transition game. And so I was 20 years ahead of my time. And I was trying to play like they play now when I was 21 years old in the NBA, and I wasn't allowed to play like that. Bill Russell put me on the bench because of it. He wanted to walk the ball up and down the floor, set up the play, get it inside to the big man. That ain't the game anymore.
Well, and you played before they had a three-point line.
Right.
So, I believe the stat I saw was you scored, what was it, 12 points in 60 seconds?
The most points scored by any NBA player in the history of the NBA, me.
And it was all two-pointers. So now there is a three-point shot, and I saw something on the news the other day.
We're talking about buckets. I scored 6 buckets in 60 seconds.
That's amazing.
No one has ever scored 7 buckets in 60 seconds. Not even Will Chamberlain, who hit 100 points. He didn't score 12 of them in 60 seconds. And so this is the transition game I just spoke of and told you. You asked me the difference, and I just gave it to you. That's how I play. And I can do that every night if they let me. He said, well, he's out of control. He doesn't even know what he's doing. He has no idea. Well, I averaged 22 points and 23 points and 15 rebounds a game coming out of Arkansas. Well, why is it I don't know what I'm doing? I still hold the records there today. They've been down there 52 years. Nobody's broke them. But I don't know what I'm doing. Bill Russell.
Well, let me close with this one. For somebody who has worked with Bill Russell.
Yeah.
Here's the question for you. Michael or Kobe?
I gotta go with Kobe.
Really?
You know why?
I don't. Tell me.
Just ask yourself, if Shaquille O'Neal would have stayed there, what would have happened?
4 or 5 more rings. I think he got 3 without Shaq. Right.
He got 5. It'd been more than 5. If Shaquille had not left him and went to Miami, what would he have done with that? Oh, my God. You asked me.
Phil would need at least one more hand, right? Phil's got, 11 rings now or something like that? He would have at least 15.
Phil Russell?
No, Phil Jackson.
Phil Jackson? Yeah, he got as many as Russell now. He got many, but not as a player. Bill Russell don't have any rings as a coach.
Right.
But he got 11 as a player. And Phil Jackson got about 6 or 7 rings as a head coach and 2 or 3 rings as a player. He might have more than that as a coach because he got 6 with Michael and 5 with Kobe.
I think it's 11 for him. Yeah.
And then he got 1 with the New York Knickerbockers with Walt Frazier and Earl the Pearl and them guys.
Monroe. That's right.
Dick Barnett and those guys. Phil Jackson was on that team. Bill Bradley, Dave DeBuscher. I played against those guys. Mm-hmm. My rookie year, I played against them, all those guys. I played against Phil Jackson, too.
I'll ask you one last question here, then I'll let you go.
You like having that ball, don't you, Jeff?
These are just the standard questions that I hear all the time, but I got to ask you, my friend.
Okay, go ahead.
Who's your Mount Rushmore? Who's your top 4?
The top 4 players?
Who's on your Mount Rushmore of NBA?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Michael Jordan, it's Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, and man, I'm gonna tell you what, man, I really love Tim Duncan, man.
Ooh,
people forget about that guy, man. Oh man, he was a machine.
That's I wasn't expecting that one.
But God, think about it. He was the most hardest man on himself in NBA basketball I ever seen. He was hard on himself to play the game, man. That's how I was. I was hard on myself. But I didn't get to play. He did.
Dean, I want to say thank you so much for coming on the show. Please call this part 1 of a longer conversation. Definitely are going to get through the book and would love to keep in touch and have you back on the show. For more information, you can find him over at Dean Tolson. That's DeanTolson.com. We're going to make sure that this is up on YouTube and wherever you find your podcast. So don't forget to hit like and subscribe. Dean, I'll give you the last word on the show here. What's your lasting impression here? Pay it forward. What do you want to tell our audience?
My closing statement is, America, for the sake of our kids, let's get the understanding among one another that we have to help them right now as much as we can to see that they have a bright future in their life as we have tried to have for ourselves.
For more information, you can head on over to teachercast.net. Check out all the great stuff on our Jeff Bradbury show. And on behalf of Dean and everybody here on TeacherCast, my name is Jeff Bradbury, reminding you guys to keep up the great work in your classrooms and continue sharing your passions with your students.
You've been listening to the TeacherCast Educational Network, hosted by Jeff Bradbury. Please reach out to the show with all of your questions on Twitter at TeacherCast or online at www.teachercast.net. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. And please take a moment to write a review in the App Store.